There we go.
Hello and big welcome to Debbie Richens, who is an emotional resilience coach. And Debbie specializes in trauma, grief, and loss, and coaches people in releasing grief that holds them back from achieving a happy, fulfilled, and abundant life. And today we're going to be talking about rising from trauma, grief, and loss. So hi, Debbie. Big welcome
Hi,
to the Inspired Souls podcast. How are you doing today?
Thank you. Doing very, very well, thank you.
Well, you're
sun's shining. Blue skies, aren't we?
And you're looking particularly summery today as well.
Thank you.
It's great to have you here today. And we're going to delve into your world and talk about trauma, grief, and loss. So can I ask you a little bit about your journey and how grief changed your world?
Well, grief has changed my world tremendously over the years. And what I didn't understand until I did my certification was just how deeply entrenched it was and how far back into my life it was. Mm. So as I learned to understand the depths of where grief goes in our lives and how it affects us, I really began to understand that actually the grief created in my life started in my very young years with parents who had a very destructive marriage.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, there were things going on that I didn't know about until I was in my adult years.
Okay.
My father was involved with gangland underworld and worked for Great Winds of all people, but I didn't know about that. So that brought massive impact into my life as a young child.
Fueled
my mother walking away from my father because she was terrified of who was going to be knocking at the door next, and of the very difficult life that she was having trying to look after, you know, four very young children.
Yeah.
And so that laid a pattern of trauma and loss that I really didn't understand the significance of, but it had a massive impact, not just on myself, but on my brothers as well.
Mm.
And, you know, doing the certification with grief recovery really taught me how to acknowledge and how to really look deeply at those things. So for all of the traumatic incidents in my life from childhood through into adulthood, I started to look at them in a very different way.
Mm.
And I started to be really deeply honest with myself about how I felt about the impact they'd had on my life. And also for a lot of the things, my part in them and how I had responded. And that also is linked to the trauma from my very young years.
Mm.
And so it's a cycle that we live in. And until we learn to understand it, we can't move forward from it.
Of course.
And as I learned to understand it, then my world opened up exponentially.
Sure. So although you weren't aware of what was going on when you were a child, you were obviously picking up on the energy of what was happening, and that was kind of being soaked up into you, and you brought that
absolutely
forward.
Absolutely, because our subconscious acts like a sponge.
So even
if we're not participating in something, whatever the event is that's happening around us, we're hearing it, we're seeing it, we're sensing it.
Feeling it.
And our subconscious picks that all up.
Yeah.
And because our subconscious is picking that all up, what it's doing is it is keeping us engaged subconsciously.
Yes, yeah.
And so we don't know what that is, and we become inured to it. We just accept it.
Mm.
And it sits into our subconscious and it sits deeper and deeper. A lot of these things help, especially when we're very young children, to form our limiting beliefs.
Yes.
You know, they form our fears
and
our mistrust.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't actually know what they are, because when we're very young, we can't articulate those things.
Yeah.
And because we can't articulate those things, we're not heard. And so our subconscious buries them deeper, and we get this Pandora's box of stuff going on in our brains.
Yeah.
But we don't really know what's happening.
Yeah, yeah.
But we also don't know when all of a sudden something sharp's going to come up and give us a bit of a poke and say, it's my turn to play the game now. Yeah. It's my turn to let you know I'm here.
Yeah.
And I'm going to start causing havoc in your life.
Mm.
And you wake up and you think, gosh, I feel dreadful. I feel awful. I don't know why I feel like this. And it's these little subconscious pokes that are there just reminding us they're there. But because they're subconscious, we don't recognize them.
Yeah.
And so we often just keep struggling on and struggling on until it becomes too much to struggle on. And that's when the losses that we've experienced and the grief that we've been carrying suddenly becomes this massive traumatic burden that creates bigger impacts in our life.
Yeah, yeah. I'm nodding profusely here because I work a lot with people and self-limiting beliefs. So what you're saying, it really resonates and makes sense that, you know, from childhood age and as we were growing older, these things that have happened to us, which we may not have realized were going on at the time, create these blocks and these beliefs in our minds.
Usually.
They come up and bite us on the ass when we're older. And we don't know what's going on, but suddenly we're suffering with anxiety and depression. And we, you know, having all these things that are coming up to be dealt with. So how did that come about for you? Were you, what sort of age were you? What happened when you suddenly thought, hang on a minute, I've got some stuff here I need to work on?
Well, big question, because actually I've always had stuff.
Mm.
I grew up in a mixed religious household, which wasn't standard.
Yeah.
So I had a very sick parent.
Mm.
And, you know, I had a father that just wasn't. He would come and go when the whim pleased him.
Mm.
He would very often not even turn up. My poor mother would be beside herself because there was no food. And it was a Sunday. And in the 70s, shops didn't open on a Sunday, you know, and if there was no money, and there was no food, how on earth was she going to feed us?
Yeah.
And that happened so many times. So the trauma was always there.
Yeah.
From these times when we were let down by the adult that was supposed to care about us, but didn't show how much he cared.
Yeah.
Because he just didn't turn up. And because my mother had very serious health issues, she was often in and out of hospital.
Okay.
And we would be looked after by my grandmother, or, you know, various other people within my mother's and grandmother's faith who would step up to the plate and help. And then, of course, there came the time when I was 7 that I was with my father for the Sunday and my brothers didn't want to come, so they didn't. And I was so proud of what I was learning as a Jehovah's Witness. As a child, I don't follow any religion now, but as a child, that was how I was brought up.
Yeah.
And I was so proud of what I'd learned and my Bible reading and my Bible studies. And I very proudly said to my dad about what I'd learned. And my dad, being Jewish, turned around and told me, you're a girl. You shouldn't know those things. You don't need to know those things.
Right. Yeah.
And I was crushed.
Yeah.
And, you know, although I don't feel the pain of that anymore, because I've sat and used my process, that held me back for so long.
You
know, I was brought up with books. We didn't have a television. I was brought up with books and the radio, music, conversation, you know, and for my father just to swat me like a fly.
Yeah.
When I'd held him on this massive pedestal, you know, he was so important to me, even though he wasn't there.
Yeah.
Was very soul destroying. So, you know, so many limiting beliefs came from that I buried in my subconscious and I carried around with me.
Yeah.
So I put up with being bullied at school. I put up with being bullied in my working life. I put up with being bullied by the husband, emotionally bullied by the husband who I thought was very different to my father, but I soon realized wasn't. Along the journey of marriage, we were together 23 years and married for just shy of 20 when I finally left. I really struggled. His brother-in-law was killed just before our second wedding anniversary,
right.
Ironically on my mother's birthday, which was a bit difficult. You know, obviously we didn't celebrate birthdays because she was a Jehovah's Witness, but it was still, it was a pointed date.
Yeah.
Rather than just any day.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and this glorious young man of 23 years old, who was the most talented carpenter, actually was the funniest, most loving, joyful person. And my ex-husband just fell to pieces, and he found alcohol.
Right.
And for the next 18 years, I lived with an abusive alcoholic man who would not deal with his grief and expected everybody else to live with it.
Yeah, yeah.
A few years later, we had our daughter. Everything was, I thought, getting better. And I thought he was making some effort to deal with the drinking, but he really wasn't.
Mm.
And he wasn't being a husband and a father that you would expect. And so I was forced to go to work when I wanted to be at home with my baby.
Yeah.
And I knew that when that happened, I would never be able to go backwards to have any more babies.
Mm.
So my thoughts of having a family just faded, because it literally was taken away from me, because he didn't have that responsibility. It just wasn't there in his head that he needed to make more effort to put food on the table and pay the bills.
Mm.
So it fell to me to support. And I hated being in that role, but I wasn't given the opportunity to have anything different me.
Yeah.
And I had a child to be responsible for, and I didn't want her to have the life that I'd had.
Yeah.
So it was a whole mix of stuff that made me responsible, even though I didn't choose to be in that place.
Yeah, it sounds like
many people end up in that place. And what you don't realize is your marriage is dead because you're trying to make it work. And you're trying to survive, and you literally, you just put one foot in front of the other, and it's like pea soup every day. It's like a real replay every single day.
Yeah.
And then when my daughter was 5 years old, 7 years after his brother was killed, his aunt, his younger cousin, and her baby were killed in a car accident.
Oh my goodness.
And our whole world imploded. And it was like, I sit back now and I look at it, and it was like an atomic bomb going off.
Mm.
It was the same side of the family. They were a very small family.
Yeah.
My ex-husband's grief just exploded again into alcohol.
Yeah.
It was incredibly hard. And I was very close to this aunt. She was my closest person in his family.
Yeah.
So to lose her was quite unnerving, but I had to get on. I had to keep it all together. I had to keep the family going.
Mm.
And eventually it took a car accident of my own several years later to realize he didn't love me and he didn't care about me. And I was just convenient because when I rang him to tell him I'm stuck in the car, I can't get out. Fire Brigade have said, I can ring you and tell you what's going on.
Yeah.
He said to me, I suppose it was your fault, was it?
Ouch.
And put the phone down on me practically. He wasn't concerned. And actually, it wasn't my fault. I was just in the wrong place at the wrong time. And I could not have avoided what happened because there was no way to do that.
Mm.
But those few words, for me, I just sat in that vehicle. And, you know, you see these cartoons where the ground opens up beneath you. And everything starts to just fall in. And in those few words, that's what happened to my life.
Yeah.
And I sat there with my jaw hanging, and the fire brigade came running over to see if I was all right, because apparently I was absolutely bawling my eyes out.
Mm.
But I just felt like I was trapped in this place.
Yeah.
I was so shocked and really stunned, and I was in a real daze for a couple of days until it came to me that actually I could not wait for my daughter to finish school anymore. I had to leave.
Yeah.
But I didn't know how. And then the journey of alienation started when I asked for a divorce. And within 24 hours, I was separated from my only child, who was 14 and a half. And within 5 weeks, she'd gone from being my loving, healthy child to a really snarling, viperous teenager that I didn't recognize anymore. I'd not been allowed to spend any time alone with her in that last 5 weeks. And I was forced out of the house in alcoholic, angry behaviour. And so the trauma started all over again, trying to create a new life, which was incredibly hard when you've been left homeless and penniless. And it was just another cycle of trauma.
Yeah.
So my life has literally just leapt from trauma to trauma to trauma to trauma.
Mm.
So I met somebody networking in Swindon 7 years ago now, and she was talking about the grief recovery program. And she was really clear about how it worked, and that really resonated with me. But as an unpaid carer at the time, I didn't have the finances to do the course.
Mm.
But I kept her on my radar, and I kept listening to what she was saying on social media. And I knew more and more I needed to do that. So then when I had a car accident myself again a few years ago, there was some compensation to come from that. And as soon as I knew I was getting it, I booked up for my training. And I booked my training and I took myself to Cambridgeshire.
Yeah.
And I changed my world. I changed my world overnight. You know, within the course of the 4 days of training, my whole world just blossomed in a way I never expected it to.
Yeah.
And now I get to teach other people that. And it is a breathtakingly loving, beautiful process that's so simple, but so effective.
Yeah. Yeah, that's incredible. So your life, your whole life has been impacted by other people not dealing with their own grief and trauma. And we all carry around different levels of trauma and grief, because any event that upsets us or has an effect on us could be classed as trauma.
Hugely.
Yeah.
Yes.
So it will vary.
It's as simple as a child losing a teddy, not meeting their best friend for a cuppa in the afternoon like they would normally in the playground, you know, when they sit and chatter together.
Yeah.
It's simple stuff creates trauma as well as big stuff. And this is what people don't really understand.
Yeah.
You know, to a lot of people, the word trauma means it's something massive, it's something impactful, and it's not just you, it's affected, it's everybody else. But actually, that's not true.
Mm.
Trauma can be a very tiny thing, but the tiny thing sows seeds to become something bigger.
Yeah, absolutely. It grows, doesn't it? It's a ripple effect with one,
yes,
one thing can then ripple out into your life and the other people around you. So if you don't deal with that, it turns into something much bigger. Like you said with your ex-husband, that the one death of his brother then turned him to alcohol, which then created, you know, issues in your marriage, and you know, and so on and so on and so on, which obviously, yes, had a massive impact in your life. So if grief or trauma isn't dealt with on any level, it will come back and get you at some point.
Yes. Mm. And it doesn't just come back at you emotionally, it also comes back in how your body behaves as well.
Physically.
I left my ex-husband in the December of 2005. In the December in 2006, I became very, very ill, very rapidly.
Mm.
In the February of 2007, I had a singular gallstone removed that was just shy of the size of a tennis ball.
Wow.
And the surgeon that did that had only seen two in his life, mine being the second. And his comment to me was, singular gallstones are related to fast speed of the body creating massive influx of calcium,
mm-hmm,
and your bile duct, et cetera, cannot cope with the volume. So it creates a ball, a little bit like a wasp's nest, okay, growing and growing and growing.
Okay.
It is fueled by extreme stress and distress.
Yes. Yeah.
So it's your body trying to protect itself and trying to expel the thing that's causing it harm.
Mm.
And it was so big that that was only the second one, as I say, he'd seen in his 24-year career.
Gosh.
And it nearly killed me.
Yeah, I can imagine, you know, that was a painful, painful thing to go through.
I was bent double like a little old lady. Mm. And I could not stand up. And, you know, the only way I could describe it at the time was like having a red hot blunt stick stuffed up under my shoulder blade and somebody just constantly pushing on it, because it was at the time, you know, I said it was akin to childbirth.
Yeah.
Because it really was incredibly painful.
Yes. Wow. Gosh. So stress and trapped, built up emotions really do cause and create illness and dis-ease in
the body. Yes, they absolutely do. And of course, the other thing is fibromyalgia, which I didn't know I had, crept up underneath the gallstone, because my body was in that place of right now it's time to let everything go, like the subconscious does. And so it let out the fibromyalgia. But because I was in such extreme pain and distress with the gallstone, I had no idea that the fibromyalgia was there.
Yeah, so there's layers to it.
Yeah, and then once I'd got over the gallstone surgery and things, so to speak, and I had just returned back to work, within days I was back in that same place of pain, and the only thing I didn't have was the red hot blood stick. I had every other pain and I could not work it out.
Yeah.
And eventually, after being sent for x-rays to just check that I didn't have any arthritis going on, the GP popped me down on the bed, you know, face down, and said, I'm just going to do this little fingertip test. And there are 19 points of sensitivity on your body for fibromyalgia. And I had 18 of them. And by the time he'd finished doing his little pokes, I was up in the sky. I was in so much pain. But I had an answer.
Yeah.
So, and fibromyalgia, a lot of these autoimmune conditions that we have, ME and all of the other ones, are all fueled by extreme emotional distress, often in our childhood, often that's disregarded as just childhood stuff, family stuff, and so never really gets dealt with. And then something big in our adult life happens and it wakens it up. And we suddenly have the pain and we suddenly have all the debilitating parts of that illness, the overriding tiredness and all of the other things that go with it. And so our bodies really do pick up absolutely everything that's going on. And like our subconscious, it waits and then up it comes and comes back to us and says, oh, I'm here now. Now I'm going to, you know, and I'm going to get you doing.
Yeah.
But you sit there and you go, where did this come from? Yeah. How did it happen? But that's what our bodies do. Our minds and our bodies work together and they trap the traumas and they trap the grief that we're experiencing. And then they say, well, it's time for me to show myself now, and I'm going to come out with a different hat on. And there it goes.
I'm going to make you stop and listen, because as humans, a lot of people don't listen to their emotions. They bottle them up, they push them down, they ignore them, they numb out with drink, drugs, food, whatever, to hide these emotions, numb them. But then the body will say, Hank, no, you've got to listen to me, and then it will give you illness. So emotional healing for everyone is so essential, isn't it?
Hugely. And it's about acknowledgement. It's the thing we don't learn to do in our childhood. We don't learn how to acknowledge our losses. And so what we do learn from the adults around us is how to cover them up. And you touched on it, food and drink. But also in our adult lives, we do things such as fall into the world of fantasy, where we're disappearing and hiding ourselves in this place of dreams, what we really want or what we think we want in life. We also go a bit mad and we buy bags and clothes and shoes and coats and goodness knows the things that people buy. You know, I mean, I've come across people with more shoes than Imelda Marcos, you know, more bags than one of these wonderful, you know, brands that there are.
Yeah.
And, you know, somebody with a sport fixation where they're actually not doing sport to be healthy, but to act as a sticking plaster to drown out how they feel.
Yeah.
You know, Another thing that often happens, especially when people go through breakdown of relationships and divorces, is people are often very free with their bodies, you know, and they often fall into the trap of thinking, I'll just get out there and get back on the horse, is the phrase, you know, I'll just go and jump into bed with every person that comes near me. Yeah. And actually, that's often because you've been so emotionally starved, you think that's the way to start again.
Yeah.
But actually, what you're doing is you're punishing yourself emotionally.
Yes.
You know, and instead of dealing with how you really deeply feel, you're just sticking another sticking plaster on and another sticking plaster on. Yeah. And you wonder why you're on through your third marriage, or, you know, you've had six relationships since that one broke down, and it isn't even a year. And how did I do that? You know, what went wrong?
Yeah.
And it's because you haven't acknowledged the stuff about how you really feel deep down inside.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so true. Why are we afraid of our true emotions and feelings?
Well, very much. It's a society thing. It goes back to a time of don't speak about it, hide it away. You know, time will heal it. Well, you know, how long do you wait for time to heal it? You know, you've got to go and grieve alone is another one that we were always told as children. You mustn't show your grief to everybody else. They don't want to see it.
Yeah.
You know, so it's all about hiding it and not acknowledging it and, you know, sweeping it under the carpet, and it'll go away in its own time. But it doesn't happen like that.
Mm.
And it becomes like a red hot poker that suddenly comes back and haunts you in a few years, you know, but in between time, we've spent our whole lives doing that behavior.
Yes.
Because there is this fear of emotion that has been shut down by society. And, you know, you're told, you know, I can't cope with your grief, you know, don't talk about that. I can't cope with your tears. Don't cry. So you're taught to just shut everything down and hold it inside.
Yeah, it's almost like it's a sign of weakness, crying or showing anger. But actually, it's quite good to be able to connect with those feelings and emotions and show them and let them out. Because if we walk around like a ticking time bomb with so much anger within, it's going to explode, isn't it? It'll come out.
And people do, you know, and then when you suddenly you hear these comments about he was such a mild-mannered person, you know, or she was such a calm, gentle soul. And then all of a sudden there's this explosion of stuff. And people are so shocked.
Yes.
Because this person has spent their whole life kowtowing and conforming to society's expectation.
Yeah.
Because they've tried and they've been knocked back and knocked back and knocked back.
Yeah.
And in the end, they just couldn't do it anymore. And out it came. And actually, it came out far worse than they ever wanted it to, because they just didn't know how to stop it anymore.
Yeah.
You know, when you consider that you're fighting with your mind and your body constantly, and, you know, it's got to come out somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. And like you say, it could actually be more catastrophic further down the line if you've got 10 years worth of anger that needs to come out.
Yes.
That could be
very much so
destructive.
Very much so.
Yeah. So tell me about your world now, Debbie. So you've been through all of this trauma. You've obviously worked very hard dealing with that and working on yourself. So what does your world look like now?
Now I have the pleasure of sharing the gifts of grief recovery with other people and teaching them effective, powerful, but very simple tools that, if they're used wisely and continuously, really bring change into your world.
Mm.
And I say it's a pleasure because every single client I work with, they come to me with a real mix of stuff. It's not just death, it's divorce, it's miscarriages, it's IVF treatment, it's issues in their workplace that they then learn are actually related to the broken marriage. But, you know, and all these things are interactive.
Yeah.
You know, we have this huge cycle of emotions, and they apply to everything in our life. not just the marriage, not just the children or the family dog, or, you know, that beloved car that we worked so hard to save for that then got crushed by a lorry coming down the road that lost control, you know, or the very real loss of mum, dad, sibling, precious grandparent, precious friend, you know. So every emotion that we feel applies to everything we live.
Yes.
You know, they're not in little boxes, but we don't acknowledge those things. And what I teach people is how to acknowledge the language and the behaviours of grief, and the behaviours and language of loss, because that's where the grief comes from. And we, you know, the word grief has been inured in bereavement, but actually it is in everything that we live and breathe.
Yeah.
It's in everything. And we get trauma and we get PTSD, or what they now term commonly CPTSD, which is the chronic levels of trauma that have been impacted time and time again with other things that have just made the small trauma that we talked about at the beginning become something much, much bigger.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's also very misquoted, and I've experienced it myself from GPs who told me, you haven't got PTSD. PTSD is for people who've been at war.
Yes.
Well, no, actually, PTSD is one of the biggest parts of the trauma that men and women who've gone through abuse in the home experience.
Yeah.
So many people live with PTSD and don't realize it.
Yes.
Because it's been dismissed.
Yeah.
I've also lived with alienation, and I'm now a grandparent who is alienated from my grandchildren. Or should I say, my grandchildren are alienated from me.
Oh.
So that part of their life has been taken away from them.
Yeah.
And they're in the world are about a quarter of the people in this world that live with alienation as a parent and often as a grandparent.
Yeah.
And that also brings intense trauma, because it's a broken family bond that you cannot repair because there are other people involved in trying to break that family bond.
Mm.
And the language that's used around the children is causing the children to split themselves, because they've got to try and protect that bit of their heart that they love the other parent.
Yeah.
But they're terrified of speaking about that love to the one that they're living with, because they're then told off in all different ways about that.
Yeah.
So, you know, this trauma can start and does start for children going through family breakdowns of their parents, starts in their very young years.
Mm.
And again, it's that place where their behaviours become traumatic, because they don't know how to articulate how they feel.
Yeah.
And the adults have their own agenda, so they're not listening.
Yes, of course, yeah.
So there's this cycle. And one of the things that I've noticed in teaching grief recovery is that when you change your perception of what you feel inside and how you feel about what you've experienced, and you've put it into words, and you've used the process to complete to a letter, and you have let those words go, you start to change your language, start to change your behaviours. You start to see the language and the behaviours going on around you. It's a bit like a slow-mo movie, really, you know. It's like, whoa, I recognise it now.
Yeah.
I'm seeing how other people are living in their grief.
Mm.
What it also does is it helps you to create stronger boundaries for yourself.
Yeah.
Because you won't tolerate those behaviours in the same way anymore.
Yeah.
And so you create boundaries. But you create boundaries not only for other people not to encroach on you. You create boundaries about how you will no longer behave. And so you become more settled and more secure in yourself. Your self-worth goes up. Your value in who you are deeply inside becomes so much more positive.
Yeah.
And you start to radiate it.
Yeah.
So then you start to have this slow change that's having a ripple effect around you.
Yeah. And then you're
and that's one of the most, yeah, it's one of the most beautiful things about grief recovery.
Yeah.
You know, and I do espouse to everybody, please use these tools. Keep using them time and again. I've used them religiously every single week since I first did my training.
Yeah.
And especially in this last year, they have been the biggest gifts of my life.
Yeah.
And they have changed my world so much. So much so that when my mother died on the 1st of May, and I was with her right through her last hours, instead of being full of all the despair and the angst and the pain of her death, I was able to sit peacefully in the joy and the love,
yeah,
and nothing else.
Amazing.
And I've been with a few people who've died over the years, including my father. My father's death led to me having an emotional breakdown some months later.
Yeah.
My mother's death, I'm very emotionally settled and strong in myself.
Yeah.
Because I was able to deal with all the bits that, yeah, were painful before.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, and it's the biggest testimony I can give to how amazing it is.
Wow, it's incredible. So you talk about the process and the tools that you use. So tell us about your coaching. I assume this is what you teach people, and how do
I do indeed. And the thing about grief recovery is that we aim to teach people how to release their grief in the shortest time possible, but also the healthiest and most effective way.
Yeah.
It is an evidence-based program. There's over 40 years worth of evidence that backs up how powerful and effective these tools are. It's a very simple process of learning how to look at who we are really deeply by expressing how we feel about things, not anybody else's judgments or criticisms, our own thoughts about ourselves in a safe, loving environment. I do that in 7 weeks, and then I offer 6 months of support to continue to do the completion method that I teach.
Yeah.
And that's really to encourage people to keep using the tools and to really learn how to use them effectively, so that when they leave my care at the end of that 6 months, they can keep going.
Yeah.
You know, and they have the confidence to use them because they've started to have these wonderful changes.
Yeah.
I mean, one of my clients recently, mm-hmm, has lost over 3.5 stone in weight. She has got herself to a level now where she can go back for further IVF treatment, which she had virtually written off as never going to happen.
Yeah.
Her business is going from strength to strength because she's released all the stuff that was, you know, acting like a bit like a limpet and holding her back.
Yeah.
And so she's, yeah, just bounding now, and her business is growing as a franchise in a way that she'd sort of had an inkling it would, but wasn't entirely sure, mm-hmm, that it was going to be where it is now.
Yeah.
You know, and
that's so fantastic.
So many other clients that have had just wonderful changes in their lives like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Through doing the emotional healing, letting go of the stuff, it can really catapult us forwards and moving on. Wow.
And it's given me this career that I never expected in a million years.
You've walked the path. So you've walked through the path and been through it yourself so that you can help others.
Mm.
And you are shining and you're sparkling, and your story is, you know, thank you so much for sharing that today. It's I felt quite emotional through that as well. It's been amazing and so, so interesting. If anyone wants to get in touch with you, where can we find you, Debbie?
So my two main haunts are LinkedIn and Facebook. And I'm very happy for people to connect with me on my personal page as well as on my business page on Facebook. I offer a 45-minute clarity call for people to come and talk to me about what it is that's causing them so much angst, and to get to know me a little bit and to see whether they'd feel comfortable to work with me and for me to be able to explain the process to them,
yeah,
you know, and to give them that added security. And I feel that's such an important part of it. You know, it's all well and good saying, sign up with me on this, whatever it is, you know, I'll give you this, 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 and never meeting the coach. Mm. I think it's so important for us to have that personal space together to grow, because that's where I can really support the client through the stumbling blocks that we find that life throws at us.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Well, I will put all of your links in the podcast comments box as well, so that people can come and find you. Just before we go, Debbie, do you have any words of wisdom for the Inspired Souls community?
Absolutely. The journey of grief recovery is about honesty with yourself, acknowledging and being clear. So my words are always to be honest with yourself about how you feel. Don't ever let someone else diminish your feelings. Be honest with yourself.
Oh, those are very wise words. Thank you so much for your time today. I've absolutely loved talking to you and hearing about your journey. And if you've tuned into the podcast, thank you very much for listening. We will be back soon with another one. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.